Chapter 16. High Charity, Chancel of Recovery, 2552 CE, The Age of Reclamation. Zoreskin, the prophet of clarity, scarcely noticed the herbal vapors pervading the warm fog around him in the Chancel of Recovery. The hemispherical room was located within a majestic tower at the center of the holy city. He was waiting for someone, and was nervous about meeting him here. Sangheili were generally never found near a Sanshayum healing facility, and certainly not within it. It was frowned on by both species, and the herbs were not cultivated for Sangheili biology. The improbable meeting place meant few would suspect him of sharing information with the Sangheili here. Zo had made certain he had this small chamber reserved. The herbs vaporized here were all gentle salves for Sanshayum's skin and lung tissues, nothing narcotic, though he'd almost wished he had some of that sort. Perhaps it was insane, appointing to meet Gitoric Clemi here, with the possibility of the prophet of exquisite devotion learning of the encounter. So squinted through the blue and green fog, peering toward the entrance, coughing slightly as he waited. He wore a light robe, and under it an anti-grav belt, and affixed to the belt was a plasma pistol. As the door opened rather suddenly, Zo nearly drew the weapon. But it was Gitoric, arriving alone and carefully closing the door behind him. The burly Sangheili commander pushed through the fog toward Zo, arms extended as if the healing murk was something solid to be moved out of the way. He coughed and blinked, clashing his mandibles to express chagrin. "Your Eminence, O Prophet of Clarity, you called and I have obeyed. But I wonder, with all that has happened, if it is wise." "Come," Zo said. "If anyone approaches, you simply came in to check on my welfare. Say that I asked you to look in on me. We are at war, and the battle lines have never been so close to High Charity." Clarity took a deep breath of the fumes, focused his eyes on Gitoric, and then continued. "While we are alone, let us not be Your Eminence and Commander Clemi. We are merely Zo and Gitoric." He had just been reading his ancestors' writings, Mackenzie Aben's untold history of the Rending, and had been struck by the informal way that McKen had spoken to Usa Zalis in their private negotiation just before the destruction of the refuge. So many centuries had passed that much of the story of McKen, famed for having brought the needful maidens to High Charity from John Jerkom, and thus ensuring the healthy propagation of Sanshayum, was smirched by uncertainty. Records had been damaged, and much of what was recorded could easily have been colored by poetic license. It all could be myth, and nothing more. But wiser historians like Zoreskin knew that much of the tale was true. Zo had strong substantiation, for he alone had discovered McKen's writings placed in an environmentally protected chest, hidden in the family storage vaults on High Charity. Important writings lost for all those dusty millennia. There were ruminations from McKen that might be considered heretical, so Zo had worked hard to keep them a secret. As far as he knew, he was the only one aware of their lengthy and explosive disclosure. "And it is as Zo to Gitoric that I tell you," Zo went on. "For some time now, the High Prophet of Truth has been... how shall I say this? He has been sharpening his knives. One of those knives is the Prophet of Exquisite Devotion, to whom I am now practically enslaved. And now I fear that with the death of regret, Truth is ready to make his move." Gitoric made a growling sound in his throat. "What sort of move?" "It is as I feared, but sooner than I had supposed. He plans to push the elites aside, starting with the Honor Guard, they will be completely replaced by the brutes. He will take control of the Covenant's military by way of the Jirohanae, with Tartarus at its head, the elites to become subservient to the brutes. For a moment, Gatorik was stunned to silence. How has he kept this quiet? The Jirohanae are no hand at keeping secrets. They bristle with hostility and are open about their hatred for the elites. But this? How could the Hierarch support such a move against the Sangheili? The Covenant would surely collapse. Truth is blaming Regret's guard for the High Prophet's death. The elites were tasked to protect him. Their failure to do so has cost the Covenant a Hierarch. The High Council is not taking it lightly, nor did they take the catastrophe at Alpha Halo well, which, as you know, was laid at the feet of the Sangheili. And I do not think the elites on the Council will be listened to, were they to raise their voices in dispute. What? That is just a guess. I am quite certain, however, about the Honor Guard and a general demotion of the Sangheili. Exquisite Devotion told me so personally. The High Council elites silenced? Such a thing would be unprecedented. And this idea of pushing all elites from their posts, demoting them? There's more. I have gathered much information since we last met. Truth has apparently sent special orders to brutes stationed around Earth. Why would he be giving such orders from here? That task is below him, and orders only for the Jirohanae. He's also sent another fleet to Earth. Again, not a job for his high station. Why? And according to data I've acquired from Comptroller files, he has already placed a large order with the Sacred Promissory, the weapons armory here on High Charity. But he has kept this quiet even now. The order, as I understand it, is the mass production of traditional brute weaponry. It appears to me, at least, that he is arming the brutes to a perilous degree. I personally believe that he is setting a trap for your people and reaching for full control of the Covenant. What you speak of will not be taken lightly by the Sangheili. I am aware. Hence our counsel. What I mean to say is, if Truth takes such an action, it will most certainly lead to war. Civil war, Zo. I suspect Truth may welcome a civil war with the elites. That is likely his very trap. He can then eliminate them quickly and consolidate his strength with the brutes. This validates my own news. Truth gave orders to assault the temple before any news of Regret's death became known. Our ships fired down onto the sacred ring after the demon made his approach, but the honor guards within the temple had almost no chance to defend Regret. He was already marked, and all help that could have been afforded him was restrained. I have confirmed it. My uncle had word from a captain on one of the phantoms. Truth did pull out the reinforcements. So it's true. Zo now suspected that Truth had little interest in sharing power with the other hierarchs. He wondered just how far Truth would go before the activation of Halo and the commencement of the Great Journey. Would he even strike at the High Prophet of Mercy? This is insanity. The High Council will not stand for this. Listen to me, Gatorik. Do not inform everyone of this. Choose specific Sangheili in the right positions, those who can keep their mandibles shut, lest your people lose the advantage of surprise if news gets back to the Hierarchs. Understand that you cannot trust the High Prophet of Truth any longer. And beware the Prophet of Exquisite Devotion. It will be only a short time now. Gatorik snorted. The high prophet of truth. The prophet of exquisite devotion. These titles they bestow upon themselves bring shame to the covenant. They have no loyalty to the writ. There is, of course, another complicating factor. The flood. The flood. The startling, gruesome outpouring of ancient parasitical creatures accidentally liberated from the containment vaults in the first sacred ring, Alpha Halo. They'd spread quickly, infecting any within their grasp, and incorporating whatever sentient life they came upon. The flood seemed mindless as individuals, yet guided by some mysterious, overarching intelligence. The flood had been presumed to be obliterated when Alpha Halo was torn apart by the demon, but recent reports from the surface of Delta Halo indicated that the parasite had already been released from its containment by the time Regret's forces had first arrived. Now it was causing havoc on the surface and had complicated all efforts to acquire Delta Halo's activation key, the fabled sacred icon. Gatorik scratched a mandible in puzzlement. The flood. The parasites were contained for a time. The flood is a great disruption. At least now, truth knows this. It may well aid him if he intends to replace the elites, even at the risk of civil war. He'll no doubt use it to his advantage, somehow. Gatorik waited before taking in his next breath, as the dark weight of realization took hold. Then at last he asked, "Zo, I must know. Do you have some agenda of your own in telling me all this? Have you not learned to trust me? Of all the Sanshayum I have ever known, you were the only one who troubled to know my people beyond what was necessary for the purposes of the Covenant. You do see us as we are, as a people, as souls. I believe that. But speaking of all this surely must be a great risk for you. Why do you take that risk?" Zo was taken aback. It had not occurred to him to question his own motives. He supposed that on some level, his ambition did enter into this. If, as he suspected, the High Prophet of Truth was going to manipulate the Jirohanai to seize control over the Covenant, then Zo might have a corresponding influence over the elites. Who knew what that could lead to if the elites were triumphant? But perhaps more than anything else, his taking this risk was all about the inner revulsion he felt for Truth's schemes, and, of course, for Tartarus. Privately, the Prophet of Clarity had begun to question the great journey, though he had long practiced at pretending to be a zealot. In truth, he respected the Forerunners and their astounding relics, but it did little for his faith when he saw the treachery of those who called themselves High Prophets, those who were tasked with protecting that ancient superlative knowledge. If Truth was capable of such schemes in the very light of a holy ring, then what parts of the Covenant's own origin might also be false? But the Covenant and High Charity, this was all he'd ever known. It was all any of its members had ever known. And it seemed to him that Truth was putting them all in grave danger, with or without the consummation of the Great Journey. If civil war took hold, would such a thing even be possible? "Gatorik," Zo said at last, "I am risking myself telling you all this, because I do not think Sanshayum can long survive without your people. None of us can survive the flood and the humans without unity. So be it. Some of us will be on guard, and we will make the necessary contingency plans, as you advise." Delta Halo, Control Room, 2552 CE, The Age of Reclamation. Stepping off the Phantom's gravity lift with the others, Gatorik gazed up in awe at the Chamber of Consecration, Delta Halo's immense control center. Fittingly, it was more like a temple in its shape, at least on the exterior, than some module used for controlling a mechanism. Ornate walls of silvery-gray alloy converged on an intricately configured dome, from which sprang a tower, the focal point of the energies that would activate the halo, beginning the purification that would open the doorway to the great journey itself. He had already been awestruck several times on this visit to the Sacred Ring. First, arriving on the cruiser, Gatorik had seen the halo itself, or a portion of it from space. It seemed impossible to witness the entire Sacred Ring with the naked eye. Its immense size held aloft in orbit around a blue gas giant, a perfect circle, and within its band, the surface of a world. Surely no ordinary mortal could have created such a thing. He had never been, inwardly, a particularly pious Sangheili, but just looking at the halo in the viewport gave Gatorik a shudder of religious wonder. As they'd gotten closer, he could make out the clouds in filaments and broader strokes of white over the land within the ring. The marbling clouds parted in places to reveal water, structures, hills and valleys. The handiwork of the gods. Astounding. Then he had been summoned to the purpose that had brought him here, as guardian for High Counselor Torg Grensami. It was not normal for an elite of his stature to be called to protect a High Counselor, traditionally a ceremonial role reserved for the Honor Guards. But the Jirohanae had now become Honor Guards, and these elites chose not to employ them. Things were anything but normal, for the original Sangheili Honor Guard was no more. Since his alarming conversation with Zoe, ominous clouds had gathered, citing the death of regret and the colossal failure that took place at the first Sacred Ring as evidence. The High Prophets of Truth and Mercy publicly handed the role of Honor Guard to the Jirohanae, a unilateral move without the approval of the Council. In response, some Sangheili within the High Council threatened to resign, while others saw fit to come here to the ring and prepare the Chamber of Consecration for the Sacred Icon. Still, there was a danger that the High Prophet of Truth might make the final move that Zoe had foreseen, with civil war to erupt at any moment. And there was the Flood. Gatorik had watched on remote view screen as the Flood had been encountered in the quarantine zone, the vast frigid territory between the ring's massive containment walls and the Sacred Icon's central housing, a location on this halo the Covenant had designated as the repository of fate. The Icon was the key to activating Halo. Without it, the ring could not achieve the purpose for which it was designed. Only hours ago, the Hierarchs had sent a small team to retrieve it, but there had been no reports since then. Did they perish in the sweeping depredation of the Flood? Gatorik knew that once the Sacred Icon was put into play, activating the halo at the control room, all that was impure would be burned away, which would surely include the parasite, and faithful Covenant believers would be transported to the realm of the divine. This very act could stave off the potential war to come Zoe had warned about. For a moment, Gatorik wondered what that meant. Faithful Covenant believers. Now, striding just behind Torg Grensami, who in armored finery and towering headpiece led a column of Sangheili High Counselors and a handful of other elites who had once served as honor guards, up to the Chamber of Consecration, Gatorik felt a flush of shame as he thought of his own doubts. And yes, they still troubled him. Was this impossible creation, the halo, not proof of the reality of the great journey? So the prophets insisted. They trooped along a bridge arching over a large body of water near a series of canyons, The control center stood on a single giant parapet, with large doors opening to a narrow corridor, an antechamber, and eventually the central chamber of the control room, where more bridge-like structures converged on the control board itself. There, the sacred icon would be applied, activating the halo, and the great journey would finally commence. Torg Grandsamy looked around in puzzlement. "Where are the Sanshayum, Gatorik?" he muttered. "They were to be here at the same time for the activation ceremony." Gatorik had been wondering the same thing. "I had thought you might know." "It is the Sanshayum who have the key, the sacred icon. They claimed that Tartarus acquired it, and the others who went with him were lost to the Flood. They may have been delayed. We will wait. We have waited centuries as a people for this moment, after all." They waited a good deal longer, murmuring, stealing reverent looks at the control panel. Gatorik all the while wondered if that tingling he felt at the back of his neck was the consequence of the regard of the gods. Would they not be here, however invisible, watching? At last, they heard the clomping of boots. "Look, there are the Jirohanai," said Torg, pointing at the large force number of brutes marching over yet another peripheral bridge. Gatorik didn't like this at all. The brutes seemed overarmed for the occasion. So many of them. Why? And where are the Sanshayum counselors? His voice trailed off as he saw that some of the Jirohanai were heavily armed with bulky ballistic weapons of their own kind, ones he'd only rarely seen before. Might these be the weapons Zo spoke of? The new ones secretly ordered by the High Prophet of Truth? The brutes were being led by a close associate of Tartarus, a captain called Melkus, the chieftain's thick-chested, brown-furred second-in-command, carrying an imposing gravity hammer somewhat smaller than the fist of Rukt, though likely just as threatening. And there were no Sanshayum to be seen at all. There was no High Prophet of Mercy, no High Prophet of Truth. "This must be treachery," Gatorik said under his breath. "Nonsense," Torg sputtered. "They would not conceive of such a thing in this holy place. The prophets must be—" But then Melkus roared and charged the elite counselors. The other Jirohanai who accompanied him took this as a sign and flew forward in concert, converging on the outnumbered Sangheili. The battle quickly came to a fever pitch. The two groups exchanged shots in the open before violently colliding at the center of the bridge, the Jirohanai burning, blistering, smashing with shockwaves, killing before the counselors could reach them with their energy swords. Other elites managed only light damage with plasma rifles and needlers, while the brutes' double-bladed carbines fired spikes that breached the Sangheili's energy shielding and tore into exposed flesh. The brutes had the element of surprise, forcing the elites backward against the control mechanism near the sheer drop to the control room floor far below. The Sangheili had come here on a spiritual mission, and were unprepared for this turn of events, with no cover and no place to turn. Melkus reached two brave elites who rushed to meet him, their crystalline pink needler rounds glancing off the brute's thick shoulder plates. Melkus slammed his powerful gravity hammer down on one guard, turning him to exploding flesh and bones. The other was knocked off his feet by the impact of the weapon on the walkway, the gravitational wave launching him off the bridge. Another elite came at Melkus with an energy sword, swinging it viciously. The Jirohanai captain sidestepped the blade with surprising speed for his bulk and slammed his hammer into the attacker's midsection, throwing the broken body into the air. The guard was dead before he hit the ground. "Get behind me, uncle!" Gatorik shouted. He sprinted toward Melkus, hoping that if he could take down the brute captain, then the Jirohanai, leaderless, might be confused enough to give the Sangheili counselors a path through, and perhaps a sorely needed advantage. If he could get close enough, jam his rifle into the brute captain's mouth? He might do it. Melkus was howling with glee and bloodlust, dispatching another Sangheili guard who'd fallen wounded under a barrage of spikes. The guard was splashed into nothingness by the Jirohanai as the air resounded with shouts of pain and fury and the sizzling, cracking sounds of the weapons, the echoing thunder of warhammers. Maddened with fury, Gatorik heard himself shout, "Melkus! Face me and die, traitor!" He was almost upon the Jirohanai captain. He poised the plasma rifle as Melkus started to turn toward him. But almost as if swiping at some tiny flying pest, Melkus swung the hammer to swat the plasma rifle, and it shattered like a thing of thin glass in Gatorik's hands. The smashed rifle exploded in an expanding bubble of blue plasma, which knocked Gatorik backward so that he skidded over the smooth surface of the bridge, fetching up against the rail. Stunned, Gatorik fumbled around for another weapon. His hand closed on the dropped hilt of the energy sword. He then saw another, still in a dead elite's hand. He got dizzily to his feet and snatched up that one too, activating both swords, a plasma blade in each grip. Their translucent blue-white blades crackled into being, charged with the electrons flowing through magnetically shaped streams of superheated plasma that narrowed into two razor-sharp cutting edges. Gatorik looked around and saw that nearly all the High Councilors were dead, many of them shattered, crushed unrecognizably. Some of the wounded elites were still being shot up by the snarling Jirohanai. Others were summarily tossed off the balcony onto the distant floor below. The Sangheili had fought valiantly, and only about half the brutes remained. But the trend of the fight was obvious. "Why didn't we bring more protection? And where is my uncle?" "Torg Gransami!" Gatorik shouted. "Torg!" Then smoke from burning flesh wafted away, and he saw it. Melkus standing over his unarmed uncle. The brute captain was crushing Torg Gransami's throat under his enormous, hoof-like, two-toed boot. And Melkus was laughing as Gatorik's uncle gurgled and died.
"Traitor!" Gatorik shrieked, rushing at Melkus. "Monster!"
This time he got close enough to slash the captain with both swords. The brute's shoulder plates partly saved him. But Gatorik managed to cut Melkus's ribs, slashing to the bone, making him roar in pain. The wound gave off smoke, and a spurt of the Jirohanai's blood coursed past the blade, while the only other surviving Sangheili guard was coming at Melkus from another side, distracting him with an appropriated spike rifle. Far from mortally wounded, Melkus leapt back from the energy blade and slammed his hammer down on the other, closer elite. The Sangheili guardian flew to pieces. Frustrated to the point of madness, Gatorik rushed in, both his blades flashing, one after another slashing down at Melkus. The brute captain ably blocked the slashes with the handle of his hammer, snarling, "You will die like the others, weakling." The energy sword spat sparks as Gatorik struck again and again, looking for an opening. Melkus jumped back, trying to get room to swing the hammer. Gatorik braced to rush him, but Melkus was faster than Gatorik expected. He swung the enormous hammer in a blur of speed, and Gatorik just managed to duck it, a split second away from having his head disintegrate into a cloud of vaporized flesh and bone. Gatorik threw himself aside, slashing at Melkus's booted ankle, drawing blood, but not cutting deeply.
"Your death approaches. Beg for mercy, but it will not be granted," Melkus bellowed, rushing at Gatorik.
Gatorik sidestepped and let Melkus by, slashing at the brute as he thundered past. He drew blood again, cutting deeper into the Jirohanai's side. Melkus roared in pain and fury, and spun about. Gatorik readied himself to try the tactic again. He was at least faster than Melkus. Malchus raised his hammer as if about to charge, but made a quick adjustment on it instead. Grinning nastily, Malchus slammed the gravity hammer down so hard that it blew debris from the battle into the air. It was as if a giant invisible hand slapped at Gatorik. He felt himself spinning through the air with an irresistible gravitational force shockwave. The interior of the control room whirled and blurred, and he kept flying, strangely far. He realized he'd been knocked off the bridge, his fall eventually broken by the heap of bodies beneath him. Gatorik lay injured and stunned, and darkness soon closed in. The last thing he heard was Malchus laughing. High Charity, The Hanging Gardens, Pod of Aesthetic Musing, 2552 CE, The Age of Reclamation.
The elites have failed to protect the prophets.
So boomed the voice of the High Prophet of Truth from the announcement system. A couple of diminutive Ungoi, faces hidden in their methane breathing masks, stopped to listen to his words, as if in rapture. Inspired by McKenskray Aben's example, Zoreskin had been attempting to walk through one of the Holy City's many hanging gardens without anti-grav belt or chair. He had donned the belt, but it was dialed to almost no support, and though the gravity on High Charity was lower than what would have been considered normal on the homeworld of Jonjer Kom, he was finding it hard going. Puffing, he stopped between two low grassy hills to listen to the High Prophet's announcement, feeling a chill at the booming voice, despite the heat of exertion.
"Let no warrior forget his oath. Thou, in faith, shall keep us safe whilst we find the path. With my blessing, the Jiril Hanai now lead our fleets. They ask for your allegiance, and you shall give it."
The little Ungoi skipped excitedly. A passing Kigyar, who probably hadn't been paying much attention to the announcement, scuttled irritably onward, as if spurred by Truth's voice.
"Let no warrior forget his oath."
"So it has become,"
Zo murmured, turning away from the happily scampering Ungoi.
"And where will it go?" "Now what am I to do?"
Zo wondered, switching on his anti-grav belt and hurrying toward the exit. It was clear now that the rebellion had already begun. Word of skirmishes on High Charity, and even the surface of Delta Halo had reached clarity. The elites had at last left the Covenant. Even some Megalek Golo were said to have sided with them, though others remained loyal to the Covenant. Zo suspected that the changing of the guard had been implemented, and the elites responded in force. It was just as he had discussed with Gatorik. The choice was now before him. Zo could either remain loyal to Truth and Exquisite, or openly turn against them. The High Prophet of Truth was a hierarch, and he held what was left of the Covenant in his hand. But he knew the difference between obeisance to evil and noble devotion. Truth was not on the side of nobility. It was rumored about Delta Halo that it would be activated soon. But that was before, when the Covenant wasn't tearing itself apart at the seams. Zo had received word that the elite High Counselors had gone on before the Prophets to prepare the chamber for the consecration of the sacred icon. But according to the displays set about High Charity, Tartarus had already retrieved the icon and given it to the High Prophet of Truth personally. What had remained of the elite counselors? Were they caught up in the carnage of this great schism? A large, gray, metal-gloved hand slapped painfully down on Zo's shoulder.
"Prophet of Clarity," rumbled the Jiril Hanai, "you will come with me."
Zo turned around angrily, but all words of defiance died on his lips as he saw the Megalek Golo Bond brothers standing behind the Jiril Hanai captain. The giant, hulking hunters, equipped with enormous weapons and shields, said nothing. They never needed to speak. They were all brooding antagonism, which communicated itself quite effectively. Clearly, these were loyal to the High Prophet of Truth. Prophet of Clarity, the Prophet of Exquisite Devotion wishes to discuss certain matters with you immediately, declared the brute. This is all I know. However, if you don't come with me willingly, I am content to let the hunters bring you by force. You know well enough of their kind. Hunters are not gentle. Zoe glanced at the hunters. May I get my chair first? If it is nearby. Zoe cleared his throat. So then, let us go and see what I can do for His Holiness, the Prophet of Exquisite Devotion.